Kingsmouth, stranger.
Hi, I'm Rob Poynton from the Innsmouth Book Club. Join me and my fellow guide, John Chadwick, as we take you on a fortnightly tour of Innsmouth. We visit places such as the Picture House, the Library, and Innsmouth Museum to discuss all aspects of weird fiction, whether it be book, film, music, TV, or art. As well as that, we stop over at the Gilman House to have a chat with a resident guest. That includes authors, artists, musicians, in fact, Lovecraftian creatives of all types. You can find our free shows on Patreon, and there you can also sign up as a patron, which brings you bonus content, plus a monthly PDF copy of Innsmouth News, which features articles, author spotlights, all the latest news and reviews, and more. You can find us at patreon.com/InnsmouthBC. We hope to see you soon, because remember, Innsmouth isn't just a place, it's a state of mind.
You're listening to KZOM, Oleander Public Radio.
Welcome to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
I should say, recording.
There we go. Hello, everyone. It is I, D.B. Spitzer, here once again to talk to you about the Cthulhu Mythos. On my virtual right, as always, Gretchen Brooks and Dave, Farmer Dave Heath. Join us once again, won't you, as we talk about spooky-dooky things in this dimension and from others. So, yeah. People's Guide. What's that?
I am spooked.
Good, because it's People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos, Season 19. Ooh. So, yeah, we've been doing this for 8 years now. Season 19 begins now. Today we are talking about a witch house and
I wasn't sure. Which house are we talking about?
Oh.
Dad jokes brought to you by Dave.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then we're also going to be talking about, I don't know, not a haunted house, but a haunted city. So we'll be talking about 1984 Ghostbusters. So,
that's
yeah.
A big Twinkie.
All right. So how's everyone been doing? It's been a couple of, been a week or so since we've recorded.
Yeah.
What's going down? I hear you have new rugs in the house.
Yeah, well, that flooding from last year or yeah. The beginning of the year did not start our 2024 off very well, but it is all repaired. Now we just sit back and have to get everything. Well, not really sit back. We get to have to put everything back in the house.
Sure.
We have all the furniture back in, but we had a lot. We put a lot in storage during the very beginnings of all of the flooding. But yeah, okay. So we're getting back to life, finding new routines and stuff like that. How about you guys?
Well,
what y'all been up to the past?
So correct me if I'm wrong.
Hmm.
But are we not recording the day before the first day of spring?
Oh,
we are.
I believe we are.
Okay. So you know what happens in springtime.
Baby goats.
Yeah.
Baby goats.
As early. So there may be a fourth. There might be a fourth co-host in a couple weeks.
I just realized that. So I joined this show. This is my first full year. So I kind of joined towards the end of the season 17. And then, but this is my first official full year of doing the show.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
That's super
they
cool.
And don't regret it one bit. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't pay attention to that kind of stuff. I have to look down to find that kind of stuff. But all right, congratulations, Gretchen. That's really cool. Yeah, no, we've done a bunch of conventions, we've done a bunch of episodes, we've watched a bunch of movies, and yeah. So it's it's been a good time. Congratulations for sticking around the show for 1 year.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I'm having a good time. You guys are a lot of fun, and like I always really enjoy like somebody putting up with my movie obsessive nerd knowledge and lack of Cthulhu knowledge. But I'm always learning new things, and that's one of my favorite things about doing this show is that it's like I thought I had a pretty good basis knowledge of like Lovecraft's work, and I'm like, oh, am I so mistaken?
Yeah,
it's just that I didn't realize how deep his roots ran with other authors, and that has been incredibly enlightening and interesting to learn throughout this process. So
it's been one of my favorite things to good to have you. It's one of my favorite things to learn about, like the Cthulhu mythos and like classic horror and myth and how it all kind of fits together for this stuff.
And how he was influenced and who he influenced, because, I mean, let's honestly, even though as awful of a person as he is and problematic, he did influence an entire genre of fiction, and have him to thank for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that, and it wasn't just like he influenced writing. It was like artwork. It was music. Yeah, it was like all this stuff just from these like, I don't know, scenes he created within his little tableaus and whatnot, he created with words within his novellas and short stories, descriptions of places, descriptions of creatures, descriptions of just artifacts and whatnot, and kind of like setting this scale that people hadn't really been thinking of necessarily.
Right, like I would never. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Oh yeah. No.
Sorry.
Oh, no problem.
We all are so like, No, I was gonna say I've never heard terms like non-Euclidean until Lovecraft.
Cyclopean.
Right. Mm-hmm. See?
Oh yeah.
The unreliable narrator is not new, but he definitely like cornered it.
He
definitely codified it. I agree.
Yeah.
And using media of the time as part of the story to flesh it out and be like, you know, the newspaper articles and, you know, that kind of stuff included in it. And I know Bram Stoker did it too. But Lovecraft, like, had people using phonograph cylinders and telegraph and stuff like that. And, you know, that kind of stuff was included. I mean, not the actual recordings, but transcripts of the recordings and such were included in like last week's or last time's subject, which was Whisper of Darkness. There was the phonograph cylinders, the wax cylinders, for this story, there is like concepts in math and concepts in reality that are pushed to a weird edge just because, like, you have things like Einstein's theory of relativity and new things in, like, quantum mathematics coming out. And that's something that Lovecraft was able to do, is synthesize, like, these old folklore that he grew up reading and hearing about from his grandfather, and like the science stories that he read, and then the other pulp fiction writers that he knew, and just kind of like smashing it together with bits of Poe and Lord Dunsany, and you get, you know, your Lovecraft cycle. You get your Cthulhu mythos, you get your dream cycle, but you get this stuff that is very, very much Lovecraftian, and you know, it doesn't necessarily mean tentacles, but it does mean kind of like, oh, I'm a kindly New England man who's you know, doing something, and oh no, I'm in trouble, it's crazy, I should never have left. Yeah, and then, you know, sometimes they make it through. Anyhow.
Yes, but, and definitely, too, this story, and for those who have not caught on or read the thumbnail, This story, Dreams of the Witch House, yes, is very much influenced by Einstein.
Yes, yes.
And so yes, we'll continue, but there's some, I thought of some things about that.
Go for it.
So, Lovecraft, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm, describes hyperspace.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's, he's taking some of the things that, you know, by this time, I guess, general and specific theory of relativity have been out for like 30 years. Mm-hmm. So he takes some very sort of advanced Einsteinian ideas, which he probably did not understand himself.
Yeah.
And then he mixes them, though, in other stories. He uses the old concept that space is not a vacuum, but ether. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So some of his stories have this idea of another dimension.
Yeah.
Math is magic, hyperspace. And then he sort of blends it with, and there's this thing in space that allows these bugs to fly.
Yeah.
Now, Lovecraft very much wanted to be an astronomer.
Yes.
And he did not become an astronomer because, like me, his math sucked.
Yeah, yeah.
And also he was very sick in high school because he wanted to go to Brown University, and mm-hmm, he couldn't because of the illness, and he couldn't really study astronomy because he was terrible at math.
Yeah.
Like me.
Yes. I've talked about this with Lovecraft in the past, but I've been a lot less kinder than you have, Dave. Lovecraft, you dummy, you're bad at math. No.
Yes.
But yeah, yeah, no, very true, very true.
There's a lot of people do not like this particular story. You know who did not like this story?
Boom.
Derleth. August Derleth did.
I love this one.
So, yeah, and Derleth is a huge fanboy. I like it too, but uh-huh, I like Lovecraft because he's the idea guys.
Yeah,
part of it's my ADD and all that, but I like Lovecraft's ideas more than his writing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would have to say one of my favorite things Lovecraft has ever written is his idea book, his commonplace book. I can't remember what it's called.
Commonplace book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Commonplace
book. Yeah. No. And that's one of my favorite things that he's ever written, because the fact that it's like, it's just kind of like ideas that he's like, what if bugs came out of someone's face? That's not one of his. That's more like John Carpenter, but. Or Stephen King's, what if there was a troll under that bridge? But yeah.
Yeah.
But one person who did like it.
Yes.
Farnsworth Wright.
Oh.
Who normally hates everything. In fact, he wanted Lovecraft. He approached Lovecraft of making this into a radio drama. Ooh. And Lovecraft freaked. He did not like the idea. But it's sort of a mix here because, you know, his biggest defender is Derleth, and at least according to him, his biggest opposition is Wright. But
yeah.
Hmm.
That's kind of a weird mix them around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I've seen so many short films dedicated to this particular story.
Yeah.
With the dreams in the witch house. I mean, we're getting into it, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I think what I like about this is that because it's so not like his other things.
Yeah.
That might be why I like find this story so fun. I don't like some of if you're like, oh, that might be a racist comment, but like with Brown Jenkins and all, but beyond that, those motifs, I more like the, again, another throwaway bunch of characters. That one of the things I've always kind of cracked me up about Lovecraft's work is like, so sometimes he reuses characters and you're like, oh, wait, it's like almost like an Easter egg, right? And it's this character is in this, yeah, this and this and this story, and also mm-hmm, other people's mm-hmm work. But in this one, he definitely uses a bunch of throwaway characters that we never hear from or see from again. Yeah. But I want to know more, right? Like, I'm drawn to the knowledge about Keziah Mason. I can't remember how is her name pronounced.
I've always said Keziah Mason.
Keziah?
Yeah.
All right. So she seems pretty cool, like having come from this like cult and stuff, and I'm like, ooh, I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we're all super focused on Gilman in the story and like how he has to deal with that. But this story so is part of my brain that I remember going into an abandoned house when I was a teenager and saying to somebody, yeah, this is like Lovecraft. This is like Dreams in the Witch House. Like, the walls are half, like, rounded, but they're not, some of them are straight because of the warping from the weather. But it was, like, it definitely, like, immediately my brain went to this story.
I lived in that house.
Did you?
To Mississippi, or a house that reminded me that. I lived in an attic, and it didn't look the same on the inside as it did on the outside.
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh.
So are you ready for Dave's unfounded, no reason to believe, but personal theory of the day?
Go for it.
Sure.
Keziah Mason is based on the Bell Witch.
Oh, I assume something like that. Sure. Yeah.
So Lovecraft would definitely had access to the Bell. I've never seen him write it or say anything like that, but I see a lot of parallels. Lovecraft would have known that story. And a year later, another sort of popular book comes out about the Bell Witch, so there's a market for it at the time.
Yeah. No, and there's a fair amount of New England folklore that would kind of even just go into this, and where the character Gilman is from is Haverhill, Massachusetts, which has a history of like having a big oak tree known as the Worshiping Oak. That everyone used as a church. There was like all kinds of like woolen mill tycoons, and there was like let me go through this stuff. A number of women from Haverhill were accused of witchcraft and were found guilty. Let's see, all kinds of trials, riots, like kind of like really crazy stuff, like raids from colonial troops and Native Americans. There was like a lot of violent stuff that happened. And Cotton Mather went there at some point in time.
Wow. Yeah. Wait, definitely. We know that Lovecraft read Mather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Then there was like influenza. I mean, this is the kind of town that like if you read its history in like a book or a video game, you'd know that it's like, oh man, this place is haunted. This place is so haunted. Like everything bad happened here. Everything bad has happened here. But yeah. So that's, and like by the time it's like Lovecraft's era, it's just had like a riot in 1915 and rat bite fever, known as Haverhill Fever, which just went around in 1926. Rat bite fever sounds like something Brown Jenkins might be. And it was, just kind of like falling apart, Federalist kind of place.
Yeah. No, I suspect, I did not know that, but I suspect that Lovecraft did, and that may have been the reason why he picked that town.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I guess it would make Gilman more suggestible, right?
And I feel like if you're from the area, you're like, oh, wait a minute, this guy's from Haverhill, and he's talking about rats. Some sort of mathematician from Haverhill, eh? Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like a mathematician coming out of like kind of a crummy area. But yeah, that's like even known for like super spooky stuff. So, Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's some interesting stuff about Haverhill. If you want to look it up, it's there.
Oh, cool. Yeah, totally. I'm definitely going to check it out.
And I suspect, as you said, Gretchen, you've probably seen a lot of versions of this.
That was the first thing I said. I was like, I've seen this particular, I probably have seen short films about 16 to 20 at least over the years. Way more than that, but it's got to be.
And, how about you? And there's a movie. But there's also at least a couple of TV shows that have done it.
And there's a rock opera?
Yeah.
That was done with the guy from Wasp?
Yeah, I feel like this is the most adapted Lovecraft.
Masters of Horror, I think, is the one you're talking about, Dave. So,
John Carpenter Horror, did
but also, a couple years ago, Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities also did it.
Who was the director on that episode?
I'm not sure. Oh, it was directed by Catherine Hardwick, and it had Ron from Harry Potter in it.
Oh wow! I'm gonna check that one out. I honestly have it's in my queue, and it's one of those things that's like on my list of things to watch.
So, it's not bad. If you're gonna watch Cabinets of Curiosities, though, the best one is The Autopsy.
Okay.
Very Lovecraftian Michael Shea story, and also Graveyard Rats are by our buddy Henry Kuttner.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So both, I think it's a hard one. And a lot of it is going to be on a TV vision from people, considering most of your audience probably hasn't read it. I think that from the TV director, it's that look of Brown Jenkins. And for me, I'm almost going to say, I mean, now with animation and CGI, I would almost say it's got to be an animated story to get it right.
Yeah.
Because everything I've seen of Brown Jenkins is like, it's clown shoes, man. Like, seriously, clown shoes.
As our good friend Ken Height describes it, it's Templeton the Rat from Charlotte's Web.
Right, exactly.
Depends on which copy you see, but it may actually be a real ferret.
What?
You haven't seen Elwood?
Oh, yeah, I have. Ah! I tried to wash it out of my brain.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now my brain remembers. Oh, man. Dave, so do you know about the secret screenings at the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival?
I know of them. I am not cool enough to attend, but I know of them.
This is one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a... I can't even, like, it's so bad. I just, you will see it. I will make sure you see it.
Dave, it's like if
a train
you
wreck.
And your friends made Dreams in the Witch House in college with a camcorder or a VHS camera. Yeah. And we're like, well... Huh, we don't have any good makeup. So we'll just dress the witch up like a green witch with a big long nose and the conical hat, and she'll go, hee, 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 hee.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
And was this called Elwood?
Terrible.
That's what it's referred to as.
Yeah, that's its secret name.
Oh, yeah. Not okay. Because Gilman's buddy is Elwood.
Yeah.
In the story.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll remember that.
Yes. Yeah. We'll make sure that you see the secret screening this year.
Okay.
Certainly.
Okay. And if me and my buddies made it, Brown Jenkins would be a goat.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Quote of the night.
Yep. That's fun. So we're just going to move on from that point into the next part.
I think so. And I believe we have a interview.
Oh, that's going to be for the Dave's Corner for in a couple of days.
Oh, okay. So in a couple of days, we will have an interview, which I'm going to recommend everybody listen to.
Yeah. All right. So up next, we will be talking about 1984's Ghostbusters. Ever hear of it? But possibly with a twist. So join us in a moment, and we'll be talking about that.
In Legacy Door, a lurker from space casts a shadow over time.
We opened our eyes upon the human world. We found ourselves lying on an especially yielding bed in a room displaying scattered relics of their shallow past, tied together by more recently produced items meant to blend with the relics. Typical.
A sensitive journalist dreams of unknown lives.
It seems like every time I close my eyes, they get stronger. I can't even say the last time I had a normal sleep, let alone a dreamless one.
An outspoken lawyer defends the suspect in an unspeakable crime.
And that client was Jonathan Strauss, held for the murder of his daughter Abigail and her companion Harrison Reese.
And a stalwart investigator tries to drag it all into the light.
Some of the Reeses and the Strausses have been involved with something that seems to include an obsession with bloodlines and longevity for at least decades.
Legacy Door is a weekly cosmic horror mystery podcast. An ensemble of actors tell a story, also available in paperback, Kindle, and audiobook. Available now.
Moving on to the next part, just to remind everyone, if you like what you're hearing, like this episode, share it with people, subscribe to the podcast, find us on Facebook, we're under People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. We're on Twitter. I don't really check Twitter, so it's just kind of the automatic feed if you just want to listen to us on Twitter for some reason. You can find us on any place, any podcatchers that are out there. Of course, Facebook, Instagram, and of course, the YouTube, where this episode will be. And hey, everyone. I have some bad news. Oh, man, am I bummed out. My super fancy expensive printer is down.
Which means
I can't print as much stuff. But what's really cool is my inexpensive AnyCubic printers are going away, and the replacement parts are fairly inexpensive. My big fancy one, I have to wait 2 weeks for them to send me a part. I'm not going to give them any advertising because they don't make my life easy. AnyCubic, though, does. So you could buy stuff for their printers that's not necessarily from them. I think you should, though, because it's not just some knockoff piece. Anyhow, AnyCubic, go to the show notes, click on the 3D printer stuff, get yourself an AnyCubic with a discount from us at pgttcm.com. And remember, pgttcm.com on Facebook, on Instagram, on Facebook, and YouTube. We're not doing Twitter, really, because I don't think anyone's doing Twitter or X or what you want to call it. But yeah. And I'm not cool enough to set up a Discord. And I don't think anyone set up a Reddit for us. If they did, I don't know about it. All right.
Okay.
So, back to the show.
This part of the show doesn't have a theme song. This part of the show doesn't have a theme song yet. Dave and DB and Gretchen go to the movies. Hopefully next week we'll have a real theme song. Yeah.
Hey, everyone. We are talking about Ghostbusters this week, 1984's Ghostbusters. And I made a request. I don't know if anyone did it, but something that I requested is that this is something I've talked about on panels and written about in the past, is watching Ghostbusters But you turn the saturation on your TV down so it's black and white. And then you switch the language to another language and put on English subtitles so that you're reading Ghostbusters in English while listening to it in like French or German or Spanish or whatever is available to you. Did either of you do that? That second part.
I failed on the saturation magic saving throw.
Sure.
So what I did instead, I tried to watch it with like a different perspective and kind of have my mind's eye of that. But I failed on the technological part.
Not a problem.
So I did do mine in black and white, and I watched it in Japanese for a little while, and then I tried to watch it in German for a little while, and the German was really painful to my ears.
Yeah,
and so was the Japanese version, weirdly enough.
The French version's awesome.
The Japanese one is like a little strange too, because their voices don't match their bodies. Uh-huh. And so some of the voice actors are too soft spoken. And so I was like, nope, I can't do this. So I just watched it in black and white for the rest of the movie. About like the point where we get to the firehouse on. That was, I watched it in English, but it was in black and white. And it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that. But Ghostbusters, classic comedy, 1984, kind of something I wanted to talk about is it's a classic film for reasons that people, it's not just Ivan Reitman, it's not the chemistry of the leading people. As a matter of fact, I want to say it's like, I feel like this film would have been better if Bill Murray hadn't been in it and they just had someone else. Bill Murray's great, but he detracts from the story. I mean, this is a device for Bill Murray to be awful. But I mean, to be a smarmy jerk. But one thing that I think that really kind of like captures and keeps people interested is the cinematography, the costume design, and you're like, what costume design? It's like the costume design. There's like the production design and the art design and just all this stuff that I like looked up years and years ago. It's like, oh, who is the assistant, who ran second camera? Who was the production manager on this? Why did this look so tight? And you look up these people and you're like, oh, this is the guy who also did this movie or that movie. Or like, the woman who did the costuming and wardrobe also did Great Gatsby in 74 and like a bunch of other crazy stuff like back in the day. It's like, oh, what do Moonstruck, Ghostbusters, and Annie all have in common? Same costume designer.
Oh, wild.
Okay. Yeah. The artistic view on this is amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, you have the family duo of John DeCour and John DeCour Jr. John DeCour, who was the art director and like pretty much head of the art department. Like he's won 3 Oscars. He's known for The King and I, Cleopatra, Hello, Dolly, and Ghostbusters. Those are, you know, it's like, I think if you go all the way down to his stuff, it's like his stuff goes all the way back to the 40s. The prop master, I think his name, if you go all the way down to his stuff, like wrong person. But yeah, there's people who were involved in The Wizard of Oz that were involved in Ghostbusters for like design and matte paintings and props and just I feel like I just keep saying the stuff, the people who were involved in everything. It was kind of the end for a lot of people in their careers, and mm-hmm. other people it was the midpoint, and other people it was just the beginning. Yeah. But I feel like a lot of people learned old Hollywood, and, you know, people learned like the new, what was going on then. And, you know, then you have all these new people learning from these other people. And, you know, it's movies like Top Gun, but it's also movies like Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, that share some of the same people. Yeah. And it's like movies that you go, you know, I always really liked that movie. And it's like, why don't, you know, like cult films and stuff like that, that just happen to have like, you know, a couple of people who are also in really good movies. And then you go, oh, well, I guess that's why, you know, mm-hmm. something has a really cool kind of feel to it, or like has this feel of this other movie, because, you know, they ended up using the same costumes from this movie to that movie. Anyhow, but yeah, that's the one first thing I wanted to talk about with Ghostbusters. The second thing I wanted to talk about, though, is when you strip away like the perceived personalities of the Ghostbusters based off their actors. When you put it into a different language and you're having to like pay more attention to the words instead of how Bill Murray says it, like Bill Murray's dialogue, because like Bill Murray didn't really care about the dialogue. He just wanted to do cocaine. And I feel like it shows at times, but that's me. And that's my opinion. For me, it's all about Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. I was about to say Ivan Reitman, but no, Harold Ramis, that really kind of carry that believability, and then like throw that believability at Ernie Hudson, who then is like, oh, this shit's crazy. Whoa, this, I can't believe this, you know? And then you have this air of believability, and everyone's kind of like part of it. Ow, oof, I just banged my elbow. Gesticulating with my hands about believability. Anyhow, but yeah, no, it's like one of these perfect films, which people say, but I'm like, well, there's this little part right around the jail, or like after the, you know, like right before they go to jail, that's a little bit leggy, but that's, yeah. I mean,
this is one of my comfort movies, man. I put this thing on in the background oftentimes.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I would quote every single line from it.
Oh,
I,
sure.
I've read the book. I own Tobin's Spirit Guide. Like, I love this movie.
Oh, yeah. No.
The mythology that is just so, like, that you just get, like, a small peek at that
yes.
later becomes, like, this book is... it's so incredible. Like, it's so Lovecraftian. There's all kinds of different influences, like Sumerian and Babylonian influences. It's such a like a rich, like woven storyline. And that's what I loved about this movie and like the movies later to come.
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
of them. I loved all of them. I know that some people hate 2016, but I loved all of them.
Hey, I've only seen the first two and like multiple seasons of the cartoon. So.
Oh, God. I own the cartoons, too. I'm serious.
Good.
Low key,
I believe you.
I am like, I would wear my Ghostbusters t-shirt. Just saying. No, I don't own a Ghostbusters t-shirt, but my kid did. But yeah, it's I don't really think about Bill Murray in it, but like when I was a kid, I always thought he was really funny, but mm-hmm. I always, gravitated towards, Dan Aykroyd's character's name, Dan Nemeth, off the top of my head.
Ray Stantz.
Ray. I always loved Ray because mm-hmm. I thought that Ray was smart as well as like being naive, but also being incredibly inventive. Those are the things I really loved about him.
Yeah.
And Egon was always a love interest, just saying. He was cute. But Janine made him even cuter.
Yeah. No. I for me, Ghostbusters was like, I feel like if I took most of the people I know who have an interest in Lovecraft or have an interest mm-hmm. in like spooky stuff or occult things or whatever. They got into it because of Ghostbusters. It's like,
totally.
I mean, if you're a certain age, it's like, you know, Ghostbusters was kind of a gateway drug to this stuff.
I mean, this, I remember seeing this in the theater when it came out in 1984, because I was, yeah. I was like a little kid. I wasn't even 10 yet. And so I think that I was incredibly influenced. I think I was probably about 8 years old.
Yeah, I was like super, 8 or 9 when I saw it.
Yeah.
Super influenced by this. Oh, yeah. I wanted to be a Ghostbuster so damn bad.
Oh, totally.
Man. Totally. But oftentimes I would be playing with kids and they'd be like, no, you're a girl. You got to be like the answering the phones like Janine. I'm like, no.
Hey, she became a Ghostbuster in the cartoon though.
Which she I did. Thought was pretty way later. Awesome. But
yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
When 2016 came out, I was like, hell yeah, girls can be Ghostbusters.
Yeah. So I thought, like, in the first couple weeks it came out, I was in high school, and it's the only movie that I can think of off the top of my head that my mother took us to see twice.
Oh, wow.
And we were at the, and it was, I mean, obviously a big thing, but I don't think we realized how big a thing it was, because the next week we were going to go to see my cousins. And that's all my sister and I were talking about was this movie. Mm-hmm. My cousins lived in San Diego, and my mom says, so you got to stop talking about this when we go to San Diego, because your cousins won't know anything, and then when they see it, they'll spoil it. Well, no, my cousin saw it too, so all four of us, you spent the whole weekend just talking about this movie.
That's fun. It's also the first movie I ever heard somebody cussing. Like where I was like, oh, I'm allowed to say kick ass. Cause it's like we came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
No.
There's so many great quotes from this film. I mean, like literally like everything. I think for Halloween this year, not to give my Halloween costume away, but I think Gabe and I are gonna do Zool and we're gonna do the gatekeeper and keymaster.
Oh nice.
Oh, is it 30th anniversary? No way. That movie is how old?
40.
Old.
40, unless my math has failed me.
Yeah, it's 40. It's
like 40th like Lovecraft, I can't do math.
Me too.
Well, that makes me think, going back to our first thing, just like Lovecraft can't do math, maybe Walter Gilman was an inspirational hero for Lovecraft. Because he was so bad at math.
Well, Gilman also got to read a lot of books, though, that Lovecraft would have loved to have read.
Oh, yeah. Totally. One of the books that I love in horror fiction is Tobin's Spirit Guide, though. And it's just like, you know, I grew up watching the cartoon. I grew up watching Ghostbusters on tape over and over and over. I think I watched Ghostbusters and Beetlejuice, like, more than anything else as a child. And the Ewok Caravan of Courage, because that was my younger sibling's favorite movie to watch. But, it's like I feel like there's so many lines that I just – like, if someone says something, I'll say a Ghostbuster line, even if it's just like, you know, has nothing to do with Ghostbusters. But if it sounds like the beginning of a Ghostbusters line, I'll finish it as a Ghostbusters line.
Right.
And I think that it's very obvious, too, at least to me, that Tolman's Spirit Guide is a comedic version of the Necronomicon.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And I love the concept of they're scientists, but they're also like blue collar exterminators. They don't like use the Necronomicon or Tobin's Spirit Guide to get rid of ghosts. They figure out how to do it with like a machine. And then because of the machine, they more or less become like service people. I mean, it's like, well, someone's got to, you know, use the equipment and stuff like that. But it's just kind of a weird juxtaposition of like this like thing that's like unknowable and untouchable by humans, like the afterlife, And then it's, you have these people who are like forced to deal with it in like this, like kind of like, it's a living kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So the Lovecraft story that this was our, when I saw this movie first and then read the Lovecraft story.
Sure.
It reminds me of is the evil clergyman. Because the narrator in The Evil Clergyman is basically fighting a ghost with an ultraviolet flashlight.
Okay.
And so
yeah,
I've always wondered if there was a connection or if that was just coincidence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dan Aykroyd has, thanks to his love of the bizarre and belief in the occult, I know that guy read pulp horror, you know, read weird fiction, you know, read all this stuff. And no, that would not surprise me whatsoever. And it's like, something to talk about is the original concept of the Ghostbusters was that it took place in the future with like flying cars. Yeah. And the Ghostbusters were just like schlubby blue collar. They weren't even scientists. They were just like exterminators of ghosts. Here we are exterminating some ghosts, and hijinks ensue. You know, almost, it sounded almost like, I don't know, like Jetsons meets Lovecraft,
meets,
I don't know where I'm going with that last part, but yeah, no, it just seemed like such a, kind of like, yeah, no, it was like a totally different thing. And Ivan Reitman and Harold Ramis are like, no one's going to make that movie. Reel it in. Reel it in. And then they showed it around and everyone's like, yep, reel it in. Make it smaller. Make it easier to do. Make it so that we could film it. So, yeah, a couple people got in on it, wrote some stuff. It's credited to Dan Aykroyd, Ivan Reitman, and Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who, if you don't know, doesn't act anymore and is a singer. So,
yeah. Who doesn't act anymore?
Rick Moranis.
Oh, really? Oh, he also suffered a terrible injury.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like attacked or something?
He was That's attacked terrible. On the street.
That's terrible.
That's apparently, really horrible. The person did not recognize him either. It was just a random violence. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
As far as I know, he did recover, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was like during COVID, right?
Or right before.
Yeah, I just remember hearing about it. Poor guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there are some deeper things about this film. I mean, one of them being like that it's obviously a satire about like kind of a Reaganomics like. Mm-hmm. View of like academia versus politics kind of thing, because you see like a lot of it, because he's like the nemesis is the bad guy is the EPA.
yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah, yeah, the bad guys are the EPA and the bank and the people in charge who won't let him just goof off.
The system.
The system. Oh, man.
And I would say, you know, if Annie Potts is the fifth Ghostbuster,
mm-hmm.
and I will go to that in a moment, then the sixth Ghostbuster is the city of New York. That This is a movie that really, it's genus loci, where it makes the setting a character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
the city
very
itself
well.
Is a character.
Yeah. 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 No, no. And it's just so, I mean, I've never lived in New York. I've visited New York briefly in like the late 90s, but seeing 80s New York and like old Coke ads and stuff, you know, just everything that's on there. And it's, you know, what's be, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. This is when Coca-Cola owned Columbia House. Or Columbia Pictures, but yeah.
And I saw a picture recently of a 20-something Annie Potts on the hood of a Corvette with Mark Hamill.
Oh, Corvette Summer.
Yes, that was the most beautiful couple on a car than I have ever seen in my life.
Right.
Yeah, she's teeny tiny too back then. My goodness. She's a teeny tiny lady, like in general.
Mm-hmm.
She's very petite. Wasn't she on Designing Women?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's been a minute since I've seen that show, so I remember some people. Everybody has Southern accents. We're all from, you know, Georgia or something. Tennessee.
Yeah.
But yeah, so some other favorite characters would be, like, I love Lewis. He is adorable.
Mm-hmm.
I love his little, like, and apparently that scene where he's talking to the party, like he's at the party and he's talking about the salmon and stuff like that. That's all one scene improv'd.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Like, completely improv that entire scene.
I just think about that scene, like.
He's like, yeah, and so the price of salmon. And, like, all of that was completely, like, ad-libbed.
That is crazy.
I don't invite friends. I invite tax write-offs.
Yes, yes.
That's fun.
So good.
Yeah.
And of course, we can't forget Sigourney Weaver and how amazing she was as Diana. Yeah, Diana Barrett.
Dana
Barrett.
Yeah.
And Zool. Well, Zeus is wonderful.
Yeah. No. She's
can't. I've never seen her bad acting. So.
Yeah. No. She does a great job. She does a really good job. I mean, everyone in this film does a really good job, but this is one of those films that it's like, I think about it and it's like, well, is it a good film for Sigourney Weaver? Is it a bad film, Sigourney Weaver? Is it, and it's like, it's a Sigourney Weaver film. I think she's a lot more important than other characters in this movie are, and a lot more memorable than other characters in this film are, actually. But, yeah, no. And it's like one of those, it's like, oh, name three films that Sigourney Weaver's been in, and people are going to probably say Ghostbusters.
As oh, one totally.
Of them. Yeah. And I think Alien, and then Aliens, or Gorillas in the Mist, or, you know.
Paul.
Yeah.
Paul.
Yeah. Did I spoil it?
No. Nope. That movie, like the one that's about, like, with Seth Rogen doing the voice of an alien?
Yep. Okay, spoiler alert for those who have not seen it.
Uh huh.
She's the big bad leader of the Men in Black.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. It's been a minute.
Yeah.
I just remember I had, like, Seth Rogen's laugh, like, you know, yeah. He was like, so into that. I can't even do it. I sound like I'm burping.
Sure.
Oh, shoot.
There's all a couple right. movies where she plays the leader of a governmental organization.
Yeah. Like in Avatar, isn't she one?
Well, she's a scientist, but she's the big bad leader in House in the Woods.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was just wondering, was there things about this movie for you guys?
Cabin in the Woods, I'm sorry.
That stuck out like super big. Like for me, like as a little kid, I was obsessed with the idea of being able to like roast the marshmallow and like being in the cream of the marshmallow because everybody's like, you know, gets covered by Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yeah.
I always thought that was really cool. And then do you remember the song that starts playing when all the ghosts escape?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That creeped me the F out as a kid. But I also really liked it too. So oh, yeah. It was kind of like those, like, you know how you see something that's scary, but you're like, I still got to watch it or I got to see it. Like that's what I think this film had a lot of, especially being 8 years old.
Okay. Yeah, no. Saw it when I was 8 as well. I just really like, I knew it was comedy in parts, but like I took it really seriously. Not
Me
like
too.
I believed in ghosts, but it's like, oh yeah, no. I mean, like we should totally listen to Egon on this, you guys. I mean, that's my opinion. It's, you know, it's just like my brain. It's like I was really into it. It's like I want to be a Ghostbuster. I want to learn about demons. I want to like
exactly. Fight out with,
yeah.
And at that time, we were being inundated on TV by like, not to like drag this out, but like remember those Time Life books that were about like supernatural like events or things like that. Like I felt like those were like my Tobin spirit guide.
I think also is hilarious is like while the satanic panic is going on, a movie comes out that's just like, hey kids, ghosts, the occult, totally cool. It's like, yay.
Yeah. Wow.
It's like, all right, if D&D didn't get you hooked on the occult or watching Thriller, this will.
Yeah.
You will be wearing black by the time you're 15, by sure.
Present company included.
Yep, same. So, yeah. No, I think Ghostbusters is why many people are goth or just big occult nerds or whatever.
A mother hears a phone ringing and her daughter tried to call her. Sorry.
Time Life books. Oh man, what is that like? The something of the unknown, search for the unknown.
Yeah.
I love those commercials. I never saw any of the books, but I like the commercials. I was like, whoa.
I got some for Christmas, and I was pretty excited about it.
Cool, very cool. All right. Well, I don't know if we can really say much more about Ghostbusters other than that we really liked it and it changed the world in ways that we can't fathom without it. But, you know.
Who are you going to call?
I think it's Ghostbusters.
Okay.
He-Man.
That's the other one.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
All right. Well, thank you all, everyone, for listening. And we will talk to you in the future. Or something like that.
And go see the new Ghostbusters movie, everybody.
Yeah. I don't know. It may be good. It may be bad. It may be Ghostbusters. So just, you know, check it out. I don't know.
Get out of the house.
Yeah. All right. Have a good one, everyone. Check us out on Facebook. Check us out on Instagram. Check us out on the YouTube, pgttcm.com. And you can check me out on Instagram. I am DB Spitzer 76. And yeah, I'm trying to get more followers. So that's, yeah, just because I like having followers. Anyway, I'll talk to you all later.
We like following you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you for being a part of the show.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
That was a good show.
I will get this out to you.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. So, I have a quick question. What's the worm that walks? That's the next week's. Is that from a story?
Oh, yeah. That's from the festival.
I need to read that.
Yeah.
And it gets really big into D&D. D&D takes that concept.
Yeah.
I mean, I think like early Gygaxian D&D starts using.
Yeah. Pathfinder did a bunch with the worm that walks too with Kyus.
And I think there's I was thinking some other worms, but yeah.
What was the name of the festival? Is the name of the short story?
Yeah.
Yeah, the festival.
Okay, I'm gonna make sure that I read that.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Yeah, it's got.
Oh, what's the movie?
It's got Kingsport. The movie is, I think, Hellboy.
No, it's Mouth of Madness. That's what you put down.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Mine hasn't popped up yet. Waiting for this thing to pop up.
Ormus Olas has Hellboy. That's next.
Okay.
Week after next.
All right.
Okay.
That makes sense.
All right. Worm that walks.
Yeah. Worm that walks. Mouth of Madness.